Talking Industry, topical debate from the world of engineering, automation, and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission, and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham, in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com.
Okay, and a very warm welcome from Talking Industry. My name is Andy Pye. I'm consultant editor at DFA Media Group, and we run a range of print and online publications in the manufacturing and automation sector. This event today is going to cover, it's become almost an annual event already, robotics and automation and building future growth. So we're going to look again at how can manufacturing industry make the most of the robotics revolution. I think we all know that until now, UK businesses have lagged behind somewhat on capitalizing on what we think are great opportunities presented by automation with industrial robots in the UK. And recent research by an organization called Boston Consulting Group has identified quite a gap between the ambitions of companies to implement robots and the actual implementation of the system. So we're going to try and look at the reasoning behind that gap and what we can do to close it, and maybe a little bit of comparison between where we are relative to our colleagues and competitors in other countries. So we have three excellent speakers today who will engage us in a discussion. No particular order. We have Nikesh Mistry, who is the sector head of industrial automation at Gambika, and he will be talking a little later on, focusing around the importance of STEM networks in building up our workforce and what's required of them in a robotic environment. We have John Mackey, who's like Nikesh, is returning, and he's digitalization sales specialist at Siemens. Making the most of robotics revolution is his title, and he wants to look at again how manufacturing can tackle the big changes. He highlights again skill shortages, but also time to market and sustainability. So we'll hear from John shortly. And first, but by no means the only one, perhaps we'll get him involved first. And the reason we thought that it would be good is Gary is the CEO of LG Motion, and he wants to talk again about closing what he calls the information to implementation gap. But why we thought it would be good to open with Gary this time is that he's mentioned that he's had many open and honest conversations with companies looking to integrate robotic technology into their business. So that's a really good place to start. It may also reflect what you listening on to the webinar may also have experienced. So hopefully it will strike a chord with some of you as well. So I'm going to hand over to Gary, and we'll look forward to what he has to say.
Good morning, all, and thank you very much, Andy. I'm Gary Livingstone, Managing Director of LG Motion, who are designers and manufacturers and integrators of motion control systems across a wide range of industries. So from the film industry to medical development to space and everything in between. So in short, we make things go in and out, up and down, round and round. That's it. So automation and robotics has been my career since I started as an engineering apprentice in 1986. And you'll see from my sporting Movember, I've got the gray hairs to prove it now as well. So robotics and autonomous and automation systems are increasingly crucial for the UK economy. Potential to bring significant opportunities to reduce costs and improve efficiency. So as one of our jobs, we're distributors for Techman robots, and we have many conversations with customers looking to integrate robot technology into their business. often the big thing we find is we're uncovering a huge gap between the information to implementation. There's a knowledge gap from where they're starting to where they're ending up. Robots are not a silver bullet to solve every application. So there's quite often a big mismatch in information there. So to bridge the gap between ambition and implementation, it's crucial for businesses to conduct a thorough cost-benefit analysis, particularly investing in employee training and upskilling, and working with industries in industry associations to just overcome the challenges, be it regulatory or financial. Key thing for me is fostering a culture of innovation and adaptation to overcome resistance to change and promote the adoption of automation within the UK. So what I'd like to discuss today and understand that given the UK's reported low productivity, shortage of workers across all sectors, we're talking agriculture, retail, engineering, and beyond, what is the seeming reluctance for the UK to invest in automation, in particular robotics, and how do we close the gap from initial interest to installation so UK PLC can benefit?
Thank you very much, Gary. Well, let's just pick up on that and ask John and Nikesh for their comments as well. One of the questions that came immediately to mind for me was whether the government understands the importance of automation to the UK economy, what implications we have for that. Obviously, at some stage in the relatively near future, we're going to have a change of government. So should we keep our powder dry for 6 months, 12 months, or should we be putting a lot of effort into talking to the current government? I'm not aware of any changes to the Bayes setup. I could be wrong on that, but we may at least be talking to the same people that we were talking to last week. John, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and thanks again, Andy, for the opportunity to join this. Quite a few, and it's really interesting from what Gary's mentioned there around the information gap, if you will. As Siemens, my role is around supporting customers in industry to adopt digitalization technology. Again, it might sound like a fluffy title, but that's ultimately the sorts of topics that we're talking around within the Industry 4. So that's simulation, it's artificial intelligence and edge computing, but a big part of this is automation and robotics as well. As Siemens, we don't make robots, but we are at the peripheral of an awful lot of them in manufacturing facilities. And I think, as Gary's mentioned there is this dichotomy of the skill set needed to get robot applications up and running versus potentially where the robots are then coming in to do potentially low-skilled work, in essence, repeatable tasks, these sorts of things. But there's an awful lot of challenges that immediately can be addressed that we're seeing in industry with the adoption of robotics. And I think to touch on Gary's point there, the robot density in the UK is reported at 101 robots per 10,000 workers. Effectively, that is an awful long way behind every other G7 country and puts us 24th in the world, so below the worldwide average. And I think, as Brits on the call here, it's probably something that we want to address ourselves and really see where that can, make inroads. From the numbers as well, there's a really good study by the World Robotics Report, and this looks at the industry verticals where robotics are used, and it's exactly where you'd imagine. So it's electrical and electronic manufacturing, and it's automotive. But as Siemens, we're starting to see some of the demands, particularly on the back of COVID, in industries such as food and beverage, where potential for robots is massive. However, the adoption of robots in this vertical is around 5% of worldwide robot usage. I think from an adoption perspective, though, it's really for us to try and lower the barrier to entry. And I think Nikesh will probably come onto this from a skills perspective, but ultimately trying to pave the path for robots to be adopted within industries and not just within the glamorous verticals, if you like, of automotive, but across all areas of our sector in the UK.
Yes, thank you, Nikesh. You've been given an opportunity to lead on from that, so let's hear your early comment.
Yes, no, perfect. Thanks very much, John and Andy. No, that was very interesting to hear, actually. And as you mentioned, I was going to talk more about the STEM and skills side from a Gambika perspective, but your few things you mentioned have given me another idea to talk about as well that coincides with that. And just for you all to know, I'm Nikesh Mistry, sector head for industrial automation at Gambika. Gambika, we're the trade association for industrial automation, process instrumentation and control, laboratory technology and test and measurement in the UK.
How many members do you have, Nikesh?
We have around 230 plus company members. And within those, we've got multiple individuals who come to us for various ideas on best practice. You know, we help to set precedents for the industry and show, you know, what our members are doing is the right way and where the industry should be going. Siemens is definitely one of them as well, one of our most active ones. So just to add to that, you mentioned a report, John, and actually there's quite a few different reports at the moment, and that coincides with what Andy mentioned with the government. So Gambika, we're involved with Policy Connect and the Manufacturing Commission, who release a number of different reports. And a very recent one, which we were part of, and part of the ERA Foundation and the MTA and Warwick Manufacturing Group, was the manufacturing productivity and growth in England. And it was all about how we can actually give recommendations to the government to equip our workforce for, you know, the future green economy, industry four, and, you know, keeping STEM subjects at the forefront of the future workforce. And there were actually 10 recommendations within that report. And so, you know, I guess we can probably share it with the viewers at some point, but there were some very key recommendations as part of that report. And some of them that stood out for me were providing SMEs with higher incentives to deliver T levels, you know, actually funding long-term and short-term campaigns towards STEM subjects, and actually rolling out better use of the apprenticeship levy to help support wider investment in education and training. And I think those are key areas which we need to address as an industry to ensure that those skills are where they need to be. And, you know, those areas, T levels, apprenticeships and STEM subjects are exactly where we need to focus in order to make sure that our workforce has the right skills for the future.
One of the things that's quite interesting is how this productivity issue might vary according to the size of the companies involved. You know, I think we've touched on it with the, you know, the glamour industries, I think was the phrase. I remember chairing a conference at Birmingham. About five. It was pre-COVID, so it was a long time ago. And there was a lot of Siemens involvement, and Siemens was making quite a big play of, like, having a cluster of small, medium-sized enterprises around their organization in Congleton. And some representatives around the table were sort of young people going through apprenticeships either with Siemens or representing some of the smaller industries around it. And is that still in progress? And well, how's it going? And where do we see it going?
It absolutely is. Effectively, I guess one side of this is the X that's in it behind me from my background here, but ultimately a lot of Siemens and its UK go-to-market is working with system integrators and SMEs who have the specific vertical knowledge. But again, that skills piece that Nikesh has just mentioned there is a big area that has to be challenged. And ultimately we kind of see a push from, you know, education and academia, but we as Siemens are also trying to influence the academic practices and the curriculum the other way, so almost a pull from industry. We're doing this within some of the SMEs that work with us. So we have a training school in our UK head office in Manchester for digital industries, where we can have accreditations and degree level apprenticeships, which all work towards basically PLC programming, and also now some of this this industry for technology around simulation, around things like operational technology to IT integration, but also a little bit around robots as well. On the other side of that, we also have a program called the Connected Curriculum. And this works with partner universities in the UK to equip the students in EEE courses, for example, or increasingly the likes of mechatronics courses to be equipped really with the skills of the future. And this is something that, again, you know, this is great from a Siemens perspective and our own recruitment, but equally, if these become future customers of Siemens or future partners of Siemens in other areas, then this is equally beneficial for us as well. I think, as Nikesh mentions, though, it needs a kind of an approach that's almost everything from all angles. The other side that we're really looking at from a skills perspective is what we're trying to do around the technology that we're implementing. And this is, you know, nothing particularly unique to Siemens, but really trying to open up the barriers that anyone that is doing STEM can have the agility to move across different work streams or different career paths based on the skills that they acquire. For example, I think a good application, and it'd be interesting to get Gary's thoughts on this, would be that there's an awful lot less robot programmers in the UK than there are PLC programmers. But there's an awful lot less PLC programmers in the UK than there are maybe front-end developers or IT programmers as well. If we can start to orchestrate some of these high-level programming languages that the likes of graduates and apprentices are starting to use now in the day-to-day work, and also use the existing ladder logic, we can ultimately open up the skill set of a much broader field of people, of industry, of engineers, to be able to work in these different areas. And ultimately, that can aid the adoption of some of these technologies in, yes, the glitzy organizations, but also the SMEs as well.
That's a really good comment. And well, Gary, you may want to comment on that yourself. And the question I was going to ask you as well was, in all the companies you deal with, what is your kind of experience as to how we're going forward as a function of the different size of companies and the different sectors that they operate in?
Okay, I'll take John's points first, Andy. Certainly the programming of the robots has always been considered a bit of a black art. Certainly when you look at the large industrial robots, that was and still is quite a specialist area. The smaller collaborative robots now have got some far easier programming tools, some which are more akin to what PLC programmers are used to, very much a ladder logic and a flow diagram, so it's much easier to understand. And more recently, even companies like Autodesk with their Fusion 360 are actually developing portals to program a multitude of robots without needing the programming language for the robot. So accessibility to the tech has been recognized by many people, and that has been getting developed over the past couple of years. Even some of the robots now, even though they have their proprietary ladder flow of programming, now you can actually break into it and add your own script as well. So people are understanding that the robots, certainly the collaborative robots, they're certainly accessible from a price point of view. To think that somebody could be up and running with a £20,000 robot to instantly make an impact on a line is a relatively small investment for a manufacturing company. The programming now, we have our apprentices and graduates and T-levels. We've got all three going through the factory. And I pretty much guarantee you give a robot now to an apprentice, within an hour, you have it doing something meaningful. And people don't realize that actually it's easier than you think. Devil's always in the detail. You can get 80% of the application done in 5 minutes. The other 20% does take a bit more finessing, but essentially you can get a proof of concept pretty quick. Moving on from the training in terms of the types of businesses, I mean, the UK is blessed with many SMEs, but some of them lack the financial resource or even the expertise required for the investment. It's a little bit of a blinkered mindset sometimes, just thinking that robots are expensive. They're not. But you do need to have some good people on board that are willing to take up the responsibility of running the line. So what we've seen is when we've transferred a manual automation line to an automated line, some of the people that are on that manual line need to be upskilled to get the best out of the automated line. So you do need a buy-in from the top of the company that they do realize buying the robot is the first stage. There is continual investment with the people to actually make the process better and better. And I was also going to add one more thing. Robots aren't dedicated just to do one job. Okay, they are a tool like anything else. You can move these robots from task to task. So trying to get people to understand that it's not a fixed investment that stays in one point and it just does one job day in, day out. It can do that, but you can move it around the shop 3-4 times a week if you need to, and the setup times are much reduced.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, a typical like £20,000 cost of a robot. There's a danger of thinking of it as a cost rather than a return on investment. So how do we get over that barrier? How do we train people to think in the right financial terms?
You want me that on that again?
Yeah, you can kick off. Yeah.
that's part of the question. That is the what is it that is stopping companies not investing that amount of money? It's £20,000. Most robotic applications we see, you can almost see return on investment in 12 to 18 months. And it's understanding, so why the reluctance? From experience, generally, you've got the younger, you've got some engineers that are very enthusiastic, can see all the benefits. They struggle to get it through middle management to sign it off. So it's not the youngsters coming through. It's, should we say, the grey moustache men that for some reason concerned about making the investment.
And John, you might want to comment on that. I mean, it sounds like we've got a number of age-related issues to deal with, of which this is one.
There is, and this is our challenge as a technology supplier to change the mindset of some of that middle management, maybe that you've mentioned there, Gary. I think there is the financial element, yes, but there's also an awful lot that we can look at from a return on investment that is maybe a little bit harder to measure. Some of this could be quality and repeatability. Some of this could be the likes of looking at, you know, employee satisfaction and how enthused your employee workforce is. You know, maybe replacing a repetitive task with a robot to then allow an employee to look at upskilling themselves in a different area and provide training there could be something that gives them more of a sense of belonging within an engineering practice or organization. These are all the sorts of things that I guess from a productivity standpoint also unlock a huge benefit moving forward. I guess the other one that I can probably leave for this one for the time being would then be looking at what we're seeing as an industry from a sustainability standpoint. And if we can use robots to look at improving our quality and also looking at, you know, the ESG principles of our organization, there's an awful lot that after that 18 months of payback or 12 months, as Gary's mentioned, that robots can provide a huge amount of benefit for an organization and a manufacturing environment.
Nikesh, do you want to come in there?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think there were some really valid points there by Gary and John, you know, touching on the idea that it's not necessarily the direct return on investment that you see from investing in this sort of equipment. It's sometimes like John mentioned, the sustainability side of things or something else which comes from investing in that technology, which you might not directly see immediately. But I think that's why there's sometimes a hindrance to invest, because they admit, you know, they're thinking very straightforward, and you know, if I spend money on this robot, I expect to get the money back directly on a return on investment. But that might not always be the case. You might have upskilled your workforce, and I think it's quite important to not always think about even the younger generations. As Gary mentioned, you know, they are the ones who are more open to these technologies. And not always requiring the newer skills. You know, sometimes there's people within organizations that have been working for a very long time, and the upskilling or knowledge needs to be sent to them in terms of letting them know exactly what this new technology might mean for their business. And I think often that is realized once, you know, once a case study has been shown or some sort of example has been demonstrated to them, exactly to show, you know, this is what, you know, investing in this sort of technology can help you with. So, you know, I think there are a lot of positives we've been seeing from a Gambika member's perspective. In the past, 3 years at least, we've seen quite a nice surge in automation products in the trends. We think that, you know, there's a number of reasons for that. You know, people are trying to future-proof themselves and build that resilience to prevent all these external shocks that we've all been suffering. So there is a light at the end of that sort of tunnel. And, you know, I think when we're talking about keeping our workforce, powerful, as we say, you know, I think I'm quite happy that John, he mentioned the connected curriculum, which is one of those actually helping the future workforce, which is something that we're trying to do at Gambika as well. And that connected curriculum program that you're running actually works with Middlesex and Manchester Metropolitan Uni, which are a couple of our member universities as well. And we formed the Gambika University Industry Council to help bridge the gap between academia and industry, exactly. So I think all of these things are, you know, helping to show that, you know, you don't have to be scared of investing in automation, for example.
So it seems we have at least sort of two elements of education to address. I mean, it's been mentioned that there's a lot of work going on with selected universities and getting them involved. Is it a problem that not all universities are being brought on stream as fast as they should? Are they up to speed, all of them, or are there particular ones that are, you know, blue ribboned examples? I think a couple of them have been mentioned already. And, you know, the it's a fast moving technology. So how do you keep courses up to date? How do you keep standards up to date as well? For that, from that point of view, you know, it's very hard to keep that relevance going. And then, you know, coming back to the age challenge, I mean, we've obviously picked up that we need to encourage middle management people with their silver mustaches to understand how to write business plans, how to justify investment, maybe how to get the finance in the first place. I mean, that's quite a challenge. And how do older people even begin to understand the technology? I like the example of the portal where you don't have to worry about the programming language. It's really focusing more on the end use objective, which is great. I mean, you know, I remember when phones came in, you know, and I mean I'm still a young man, as you know, and I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up, but I remember my kids, who are 34 and 40, you know, they took to the phone a lot faster than me. And then for a little while, my niece moved in for 3 years and she was 16, and I couldn't believe what she could do on the phone. It was just a, you know, totally different world, you know, and I realized at that time, maybe I should be put out to grass. So is there a bit of a risk with people's fears as they get older as to what role they're going to play in this robotics revolution? And is that something that's slowing up the change?
I think I can come in on that one, and this probably carries on from Gary's point around that portal environment from Autodesk. On a Profinet side, as an industrial protocol, the standard robot command interface is something that's been developed as an open standard in association with the Profinet Association to really open up this skill set, as mentioned, to bring out the logic of a robot controller into a PLC environment. There's an awful lot of experience in the UK around PLC programming and ladder logic, as Gary mentioned. So we're not necessarily just talking around, you know, looking at interpolation of robotics within high level programming languages. We're also looking at this the other way. So that huge wealth of resource that we have of PLC programmers from 20, 30, 40 years or so to be able to then bring some of this in and lower the barrier to entry is something that this robot command interface does as well. At Siemens, we have this within our own portal, within a robot integrator package, and Gary and I were discussing this earlier on. We have an awful lot of end robot users that are on board with this, so robot vendors that can bring in their logic, their programming environment into a more, maybe more native, maybe more friendly environment within the Siemens environment for some of those more experienced engineers, for example. But this really touches on something that's quite interesting in a report by Made Smarter. And this is all around innovation of robotics and ultimately adopting robotics. But I do think this becomes a blend, and it's got a 7-stage process of adopting robotics. Number 4 is set the requirements. So really look at something that's quantifiable, that can be measurable and is achievable that a robot can do. And that isn't necessarily something that is just necessarily done via the robot programmer. It may also be done by the experienced professionals that work within a manufacturing environment and can understand the processes or the potential benefits that something could bring. So it really is not something that is from a specific demographic. I think it really, you know, is something that from a continuous improvement perspective, we really had to look at within organizations from all backgrounds.
Nikesh, anything you want to add on that side?
No, actually, I think I completely agree with that. I mean, in terms of adding with that, I think it is the whole organization that can be looked at to improve in different areas. And, you know, we work with more the automation side of things than robotics, but often we do see, the implementation of both. You know, we have member companies who do have robotics, and we are starting to see, extra training, programs be added to look out for, you know, like we said, not just university graduates, but apprentices, people from T levels, you know, all different backgrounds. And I think that's quite key as well. It's not just, get graduates straight out of university, because they are great and they've got direct access. But there are so many people out there who have the capability to learn such new simple platforms like the one Gary was talking about, you know, and that opens up to everybody. So I think these are all quite key essential areas that we can learn from in order to get, you know, the right skills that we need. It's about addressing everybody really and educating them on what it does mean to, you know, invest in a robot and what these robots can do and what automation solutions can mean for productivity as a whole for your business, really, not just profit.
Talking industry. Topical debate from the world of engineering, automation, and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission, and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham, in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com.